digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
This is Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher, where Kevin and his guests dig a little deeper into today's issues surrounding the environment, farming, gardening, and food.
And good afternoon. My guest today on Digging in the Dirt is Lynn Zinser, the founding editor of Climate Liability News. She is responsible for all editorial content, social media, and media partnerships for CLN. Previously, she was senior editor at Inside Climate News from 2015 to 2017. And before joining ICN, she spent 11 years as editor and writer and digital producer for the New York Times. In all, she has 3 decades of experience in media and has won numerous writing awards and has been nominated for, get this, a Pulitzer Prize. Pretty cool. Climate Liability News is a not-for-profit news site dedicated to reporting on the issues of at the intersection of climate change impacts and the law. Those issues include government and corporate responsibility and accountability for global warming and its consequences across society and around the world. Through hard-nosed, uncompromising journalism, CLN seeks to advance a greater understanding and wider public discussion of the role of the law in addressing the wide-ranging impacts of climate change. Welcome, Lynn.
Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. Well, tell me why you thought there was a need to start Climate Liability News. Was it a perceived lack of coverage in this area, or is just more stories like this?
Well, the foundation of it was actually the election of President Donald Trump. So a lot of the people are kind of parents. Nonprofit, the Institute for Sustainable Government Development, got a very large chunk of money to dedicate some of its work toward legal solutions to climate change. So while President Obama was president, most of the legal community, people who would think about things in terms of liability, thought that our government was at least working on the issue of climate change. The Paris Agreement had been signed. Things were sort of looking like governments were going to step up and take this problem seriously and with the urgency it needed. Well, as soon as Donald Trump was elected, that world understood that wasn't going to happen anymore as far as the United States was concerned. So what role does law come in? So we're a nonprofit. We are donation-based. We have a significant number of foundations and other philanthropists who wanted to put some money toward this issue. And our parent nonprofit decided, well, okay, this is going to happen. There are going to be more lawsuits. They're going to be supported by a wide range of people. We should have a website that covers them and not an advocacy website, because there's plenty of advocacy out there. Like, people yelling at each other with their opinions is not something we need more of. What we need is just a place to delve into the issues on an unbiased basis. Now, a lot of people think that just because we pay attention to the issue, that is a bias, you know, but that's what they say a lot about a lot of journalism. But we tackle it from both sides. We give both sides a chance to speak in every story, and we just write about what is happening and investigate things that people haven't uncovered yet. So that's basically our reason for existence and why we got started when we did.
So you're seeing an increase in lawsuits from municipalities and citizens in this area?
Yeah, I mean, this went from 0 to 60 in really only a couple of years. There were none of these lawsuits. Well, I shouldn't say none. There was one. The Juliana versus the United States, the 21 young people suing the United States government, they started by suing the Obama administration, because even as much as being done, their argument is not enough was being done. I mean, the government is still supporting a fossil fuel-based economy in so many ways, and that lawsuit was meant to challenge that thinking. Like, we should be working way faster towards a renewable energy economy than we are now. So that lawsuit actually predated, but that was like really the only lawsuit that really existed of the stuff that's going on now. And it's really only been since 2016 that the rest of this stuff has come up. The lawsuits come from municipalities, the one state in the ring so far, other states clearly eyeing it. You know, the idea that, okay, we're not tackling climate change on the legislative side because Congress is not dealing with it. Clearly, the president doesn't want to deal with it. So how do we get the courts to support this issue? And that's what's been happening since then. So it really went from almost no lawsuits to a whole bunch. You know, there's more than a dozen communities now, and other kinds of lawsuits as well.
So, you know, on this program, we always encourage people to, you know, vote with their dollars. Like, you know, if you don't like a company's practices and you want change, then don't buy their products. Is holding companies liable for some of their, you know, climate actions doing a similar kind of thing?
Well, definitely. The thing is, and what a lot of the oil companies and fossil fuel companies would like you to believe is because you put gas in your car, you're causing climate change. But the reality of our world is that we aren't given a choice. Like, when we go out to buy a car, there's not a 50-50 shot of, okay, I could buy, you know, an electric car or a fossil fuel car. Like, the infrastructure doesn't exist for widespread use of electric cars right now. And why doesn't it? Because, well, basically, our economy was so based around fossil fuels for so long. To move it off of that takes some real effort. And it's not up to you and me. Like, we can't make that effort. I can't, you know, just wave my hand and have electric charging stations at enough places to make an electric car, you know, an equal choice for me when I need to go buy a car. And, you know, our society has been set up around the car. So, I mean, there's so much of that that is just so built in. So individual actions are great in terms of everything you can do to lessen your own personal footprint. But there are so many institutional problems. And to tackle the institutional level problems, it's going at the larger issues. So all of these companies knew for decades, 50 years, that this was all going to happen. I mean, they had scientists studying this issue back into the 60s. Our Pulitzer Prize finalist series at Inside Climate News was Exxon knew. It was Exxon's research that showed what they'd known about climate change for many, many decades. And instead of kind of making that clear to the public and trying to help in transitioning the world to a cleaner energy, they doubled down on fossil fuels. They tried to create a lot of doubt so people wouldn't understand what was going on. They basically chose their own bottom line over working toward a sustainable future. So since they did know that, and they've been working to instead make money instead of protecting the planet, now it's like, okay, now you have driven 50 years of global warming. You've known it. You've caused all of these problems. And now you need to help pay for the impacts, because the impacts are happening now already. This isn't something in the future. It's happening now.
Right. So talk to me a little bit about this accountability, because you're right. It seems that the onus has been laid on the consumer and, you know, society in general, and not on the purveyors of all this stuff, even though we now have the documentation that says they knew. Is the accountability switching now through these lawsuits?
Well, that's what the lawsuits hope to do. I mean, it's definitely, I mean, if you take a step back, you know, like I said, this went from nobody was talking about this a couple of years ago to all of a sudden there are all of these lawsuits. Now, these lawsuits have to start succeeding, at least to a certain degree, for there to act, you know, for there to be actual change. But, you know, next couple of days, the trial of Exxon in New York State about what it's known about climate risk. And, you know, it's a really important case because New York has the strongest anti-fraud law in the country. And because, you know, Wall Street and, you know, all the publicly traded firms trade in the New York Stock Exchange, that gives them standing to sue all these companies for misleading investors. And it's got the strongest statute to do it. So Exxon in that process, so not only, I mean, is Exxon worried about losing the case and facing potentially billions of dollars in fines, but in the process of the case has had to turn over documents to New York State detailing a lot of what they've known about climate change, what they've communicated about climate change. And not only is New York using those documents, and once those documents are out, other lawyers and other interested parties in suing now have access to those documents that used to be private and now they're public. So once this stuff starts getting out there, more people are suing, they're going to succeed. I mean, you know, the parallel is to the tobacco, the fight against big tobacco for hiding the health impacts of smoking and what they knew for a very long time and continue to profit off of. So what is easy to forget about tobacco is all of the early lawsuits failed. Like, they failed and failed and failed and failed. And only when the government got involved in a racketeering case, and then the state started to file lawsuits. It wasn't individual lawsuits that succeeded. It was finally that effort that finally succeeded against big tobacco. So it's, you know, it generally doesn't happen right away. Kind of have to build up to a success. And once you get one, then it goes from there. So it's going to take a little while to shift it, but it's come a long way already.
Yeah, it's similar to the asbestos cases, I guess, and the new opioid manufacturers cases that are out there now. They're using those models to sue with.
Right.
I understand that there was a big wave of suits back in like the early 2000s, but they all failed. What's changed in this regard?
Well, the suits in the early 2000s, their biggest issue was they filed in federal court, and they were challenging companies under federal law. And that didn't work because the court said, well, there is a mechanism for you to deal with climate change, and that's the Environmental Protection Agency. The Clean Air and Clean Water Act empower the EPA to govern that area. So the courts said they had no role. So it's like, basically deal with your government instead of the courts. And, you know, there was a big decision along the way. I mean, it wasn't clearly, I mean, the individual liability lawsuits failed. But along the way, you did get Massachusetts v. EPA that did get the Supreme Court to agree that, yes, greenhouse gases are a pollutant that the EPA should be regulating. So that was a big deal. That did succeed. We are responsible for the climate-changing gases and not just, you know, air pollution in terms of health effects of just air pollution, but also the gases that change the climate and not just the air you breathe now. So that was a big deal. But so the lawsuits failed in federal court because we have the EPA to lean on that is supposed to be watching out for these things. It clearly is not right now. I mean, that's obviously this administration is trying to roll back as much as they possibly can on regulating all of this stuff. But from the court's point of view, that's their job. And, you know, as public, we're just supposed to vote the right people in to take care of that. But now the lawsuits are by and large being filed in state court under state laws, state public nuisance laws that have nothing to do with the EPA. So this is the new strategy. Okay, if the federal judges are just going to throw up their hands and say, deal with the EPA, how about we file in state? Because we have state laws that say you need to protect our environment as well. Not just to protect the environment. The other laws are like, if you sell a dangerous product that harms the public, you are liable for the damages that you cause for selling that dangerous product. So it's a very different approach than the ones they took in the early 2000s.
But it would seem to me that one of the problems is showing that there's damage to the public because the damage is slow moving and not perceptible in a lot of ways.
Well, it is unless you're in a coastal community. I mean, if you can certainly, you know, there's 40 straight days of, you know, sunny day flooding in Miami, I believe was what I read last week. You know, that is climate change. You have a hurricane that dumps 60 inches of rain on Houston. That's climate change. That's a climate impact. I mean, yeah, we always had hurricanes, but they didn't dump 60 inches of rain. I mean, that's insane because, you know, these hurricanes are now supercharged because of a warmer atmosphere. So the climate impacts, like, and the dollar amounts of things that cities already have to do is very overlooked, but it's quantifiable, you know. So, 10, 20 years ago, it would have been hard and fuzzy to say, oh, these are climate impacts. I mean, climate impacts now are everywhere. Wildfire season in California now basically is year-round. There used to be a wildfire season. There isn't. It's all wildfire season. I mean, and the fires are so destructive. You know, the underlying drought, again, you can tie all of these things. Science is not just me. It's science ties all of these things to a warming climate. So this all the science is much stronger. It keeps getting stronger. We can keep drawing the lines closer from one thing to another. So that gives courts more to lean on than they used to have. So all of that is not some fuzzy thing off in the future anymore. It's already happening right now.
And to your point, Miami Beach declared a climate emergency just this week.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, New York City has billions of dollars of adaptations plans to try to protect the city from climate change, and they're having to do it now. You can't wait until the seas have risen to protect all the infrastructure that's going to be underwater. You know it's going to you know the water's coming, and you have to do it now. So these are real costs that are happening, you know, right now.
You think the corporate world's taking notice of climate liability news?
Believe me, the fossil fuel industry knows who we are. we're small, but they, you know, they don't like us. You know, there's an entire little thing. The National Association of Manufacturers has created a little offshoot called the Manufacturing Accountability Project. I love that MAP. And their whole job is to discredit these suits. And so in the process, they've been trying to discredit us, you know, CLN and our little wing of the world. They don't have a whole lot to go on. So they've tried to do things like, you know, question our nonprofit status, and our nonprofit status is fine. You know, it's like all of they've tried all this stuff. But yeah, they know we exist. We're small, but they don't like that we keep this stuff in the forefront.
Yeah. I mean, you know, The Guardian in London just released a study that 20 fossil fuel companies whose relentless exploitation of the world's oil, gas, and coal reserves can be directly linked to more than one-third of all greenhouse gas emissions in the modern era. You think identifying these 20 and then is going to precipitate some kind of legal actions against them and start putting pressure on them to clean up their act?
Well, it gives litigation a way to pin a certain amount of blame on individual companies. You know, some of the federal judges who have ruled, the federal judge who dismissed the suit that San Francisco and Oakland filed against a bunch of oil companies, he said, oh, it's just too big, it's too diverse. How can we just blame these companies? How can we just blame these five companies? Well, you have research saying how much of global warming each of these five companies have caused, so why can't you then use the math to tie X amount of responsibility to each one? So that type of research helps people bringing suits to say, yeah, you have caused this much of the problem. So you can't just throw up your hands and say, oh, we can't determine who caused it. We know who caused it. These 20 companies have pumped this much emissions into the air. And that's who, you know, that's what's at the root of this.
We're talking to Lynn Zinser, the founding editor of Climate Liability News. Through covering this sector, what's your biggest takeaway of the fight to deal with the warming of the planet?
I think the biggest takeaway is that this stuff is necessary because even the most well-intentioned right now politicians worldwide, and it's not just the United States, they propose changes, but they're not really dealing with the problem with the urgency that it needs. And it's been really, really interesting. The Swedish teenager, Greta Thunberg, who kind of started this whole kids' climate movement, she's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And she spoke to the UN at their latest meeting where, you know, the UN meetings tend to be very self-congratulatory of like, oh, look at all we're doing to help the climate. And she stood in front of him and said, you are not doing enough. Like, you're sitting here, like, talking like you're changing things. Like, what is changing? Emissions are going up. You know, this is not being treated as the emergency that it really needs to be treated as. It is like even the most well-intentioned people who think, yeah, we're really doing this, we're not really doing it. You know, it's so the lawsuits put a little fire under the bottom of it. You know, it's like, okay, why not turn back to the corporations who have made so much money off of the energy industry and say, okay, you helped cause this problem, start paying for it. And only then really it's just you have to light the fire that turns this into an urgent issue in the minds of people. So even the people who think it's urgent are not really tackling it with the urgency that is necessary.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Do you think that it will change as like coastlines get eaten up? You know, we lose the outer islands of North Carolina and parts of Miami disappear underwater. Do you think the urgency will increase? And also, do you think the accountability, people will be looking to blame somebody and say, hey, what, you did this, you know, is it going to get tougher on these companies?
Yeah, I think it will, because the problem of costs, especially for like extreme weather events, we just keep shoveling it onto like the National Flood Insurance Program, which is about, last we wrote a story about it, was $25 billion in debt. And then, you know, FEMA to try to bail out these communities, that these things are falling way short. And now I believe insurers are going to be backing away from insuring these properties. Is going to be a real reckoning of who can live on the shore that they want to live on so badly. And then when the extreme weather events come in, when people are wiped out and there's no money left to help them, it's like, okay, well, why, you know, why is this happening? Why should the people suffer when the companies that made so much money off of all of this are not, you know, feeling any of this pain at all? So I think, yes, it will only get more urgent as more people have to deal with the impacts. You know, but the sad thing is you really want people to have to, like, die and lose their lives before we really sit up and deal with the problem of costs. Unfortunately, that's probably what it's going to take, just because it's so entrenched.
Yeah, sometimes change doesn't happen unless there's fear and pain. It looks like some pain might be coming down the line. Do you think climate change is a human rights issue, as some of these teenage activists are saying?
Well, it absolutely is a human rights issue, because the people who suffer most are the people who, A, contributed probably the least amount to the problem, and B, will suffer overwhelmingly impacts. It is, you know, the rich person with the house on the coast is going to be able to move away, set up somewhere else, you know, deal with the problems because they have the money to do it. You know, the populations that don't have those resources are going to be the ones that are really going to struggle. It's totally a human rights issue. I mean, a lot of the immigration issues, a lot of the immigrants that come to the southern border came from drought-stricken Central American countries. You know, these are the people who don't have the means to deal with the problem. So, and it's left at the feet of the poor, overwhelmingly. And like I said, they had so little to do with the problem, you know. The developing countries of the world did not pump the vast majority of these greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. It was the rich countries that did it.
So I have a three-part question, but first I want to say that, you know, a recent poll conducted by the Washington Post and the Kaiser Family Foundation found that nearly 80% of Americans believe climate change is a crisis or a major problem, at least. But that doesn't mean they're eager to pay for it. Only 40% of Americans willing to pay $2 a month tax on their electric bill to combat the problem, while 71% opposed a $10 tax, and 64% rejected a 10-cent per gallon levy on gasoline. But they're solidly behind taxing the rich and the carbon polluting companies, by the way. But what is your analysis, since you're so close to this subject and see it in a legal manner? What's your analysis of the mind of the public, the government, and the corporations on this climate crisis?
Well, anytime you call it a tax, you know, you hit that little, you know, reflexive, like, ah, I already paid too much taxes. So, yeah, and I mean, rightly, it's like, why do you heap it back on us? You know, as people get more familiar with the causes of climate change and why it's happening, it's hard to expect people to say, okay, yeah, here, now you have to pay into this. When so many other responsible institutions, including corporations, have not, you know, felt any pain at all. So I get the response. It's also, like I said, not, people understand that this is happening. I don't know that it rises to the level of, okay, we're all going to have to suck it up and do something to help. You know, and a lot of that, like I said, has been how it's been communicated to us over the years. I mean, the oil industry worked so hard to make sure the public did not understand this for a very long time and had enough politicians who would pass along that message that people don't quite appreciate it to the level that it really is unless you pay more attention to it. So that the fact that the public opinion has shown enough people understand this to be a crisis is a big step forward. If you looked at the trend of that, I would say it's been very recent, a recent upswing on that. The problem in the past is even the people who thought it was important wasn't enough of an important as a voting issue. It didn't rise far enough up the list of issues that they voted on. So politicians were not incentivized to have policies. Like, this wasn't important enough to the voters to make it the crucial issue. So I'm not going to steer my message towards that. You know, it's been until this presidential campaign that anybody asks anybody about climate change. I mean, the last election, like, there was just zero discussion about climate change and all the debates and everything. It's like, yeah, it's an issue. People think it's important, but it's not, hasn't risen up high enough as a voting issue. So politicians haven't responded because they follow, you know, they follow the votes, they follow the money, and people are not solely voting on this issue. There's so many other issues and things out there that people are voting on. So even now, so there was a huge CNN climate town hall where all the Democratic candidates talked about their climate policies, which was amazing, and that they spent 7 hours talking about climate change. But then the next kind of overall debate, they were talking about Ellen DeGeneres for part of that, but they didn't have a question about climate change. So it's like, okay, so there's some progress and then there's not. So political will hasn't shifted quite as much as I guess you would hope, considering understanding, you know, that the urgency of what's going on, that we really need to be discussing it more.
And the third leg on this stool, the one that I think is really important, is corporate buy-in. Are they, you seeing any indication that corporations are getting nervous about the situation, that it's going to get worse and then they have to do something about it? Because I don't think without corporate buy-in, there's not going to be significant change, my opinion.
Yes, absolutely. And by corporate buy-in, I mean, it's interesting because there are X amount of companies who will talk about how much, you know, of their power they're getting from renewable energy. And so clearly they're thinking about it. But they haven't quite gotten to the point where the rubber hits the road. The major banks are still funding, you know, major fossil fuel infrastructure and projects because they still think that there's money in it. So there hasn't been a major foundational shifts in corporate America. It's like, it's going to take something big to get them to shift. And, you know, shareholders have been trying, but mostly they try, you know, at the bigger companies. You know, Amazon employees like walked out for a day because Amazon isn't dealing with climate change enough. So there's been some push and pull, but it's clearly they are not at the level where they think, okay, we have to deal with this or we're in trouble. And I don't know what it's going to take, but clearly that they do have to buy in. They are going to have to get on board. You know, and if Amazon came out tomorrow and said, we're decarbonizing our delivery, you know, something, I mean, that's huge. I mean, how much of the delivery world is one company, you know, responsible for? Like, that could make just a gigantic difference, but they are all, you know, they're looking out for them, not us, you know, which is at the root of the problem with capitalism. You need regulation to keep them from looking out the rest of us and not just their own bottom lines.
I always wonder, you know, what those executives are thinking, and they must have grandchildren and children who are going to be affected by this in a major way. I mean, if they have property along the coastline, which many of them do, it could be right in their face in the future.
Yeah, that's the question that stumps me too. I don't know, you know, the politicians will just stand up there and still say, you know, I don't, this isn't really a problem. This isn't even happening. You know, I mean, up until a couple of years ago, it was perfectly acceptable to say, yeah, no, I don't believe in this climate thing. You know, it's just not happening. It's like, yeah, you have kids, you have grandkids. Like, how do you look around at the world and say, yeah, screw you all? Like, I don't understand how people can do that. So that's mind-boggling to me. But I think when your whole world, you know, gets built around a certain set of ideas, a way of thinking, it's hard to change that. So you just deny it until you can't deny it anymore.
Yeah, denial is not just a river in Egypt.
Right.
Final question for you. Are you optimistic? I ask all my interviewees this question. From your perch, are you optimistic about the future and how things will go?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard question. It's funny because part of my job that's so hard is I read all of these studies. You know, I know all of the the latest stuff of, you know, what parts of Antarctica are collapsing. And it's hard because you just look at this and just when you look forward, we're not dealing with it on the level that, like, so if you read all of those studies, you know, we'd have to be dealing with this at a much, much stronger level currently. You know, that said, I also do believe that at some point, you know, people will get it. And I guess I'm hopeful and optimistic that once that happens, people will use this as an opportunity to pull together. Right now, the world kind of feels very splintered. People are like, oh, just protect me. Screw the rest of you. You know, feeling this kind of rise in populism around the world and isolationism. And as this grows as an issue, it's a reason to look around and say, no, we all have to pull in the same direction. You know, we're all looking up at the same sky. I'm hopeful that having an issue this big and this overwhelming will get people to realize that we're all rowing the same boat, no matter what country we're from, what color our skin is, all of this. It's, we're all humans, and we're going to have to try to turn this around together. So there are days when that seems very, very far away and impossible, but I guess I remain hopeful that that can happen.
Lynn Zinser, the founding editor of Climate Liability News. Thanks for joining me today, Lynn.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And thanks so much for paying attention to this topic. People really need to know about it.
Yeah, thank you. It's our pleasure here. It's one of our issues. It's the issue, I guess, in the future for me.
No, it is definitely. Yeah, all other issues will spin off from this at some point. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to own this one. Well, take care and thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yep.
Digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
You've been listening to Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher.